Chapter 26. All the more passionately from knowing that the others had also lost their hearts to him. There is contagion in this sentiment, especially among women. And yet that same hungry nature had fought against this, but too feebly, and the natural result had followed. "I will never stand in your way, nor in the way of either of you," she declared to Reddy, that night in the bedroom, her tears running down. "Can't help this, my dear. I don't think marrying is in his mind at all, but if he were ever to ask me, I should refuse him, as I should refuse any man."
"Oh, would you? Why?"
said wondering Reddy. "It cannot be, but I will be plain, putting myself quite on one side. I don't think he will choose either of you. I have never expected a thought of it," moaned Reddy. "Be but oh, I wish I was dead." The poor child, torn by a feeling which he hardly understood, turned to the other two girls who came upstairs just then. "We be friends with her again," she said to them. "She thinks no more of his choosing her than we do." So the reserve went off, and they were confiding and warm. "I don't seem to care what I do now," said Marion, whose mood was turned to its lowest base. "Was going to marry a dairyman at Stickleford, who's asked me twice. But my soul, I would put an end to myself rather than be his wife now. Why don't he speak, Is?" "To confess, then," murmured Is, "I made sure today that he was going to kiss me as he held me, and I lay still against his breast, hoping, and hoping, and never moved at all. But he did not. I don't like biting here at Talbothays any longer. I shall go home." The air of the sleeping chamber seemed to palpitate with the hopeless passion of the girls. They writhed feverishly under the oppressiveness of an emotion thrust on them by cruel nature's law, an emotion which they had neither expected nor desired. The incident of the day had fanned the flame that was burning the inside of their hearts out, and the torture was almost more than they could endure. The differences which distinguished them as individuals were abstracted by this passion, and each was but portion of one organism called sex. There was so much frankness, and so little jealousy, because there was no hope. Each one was a girl of fair common sense, and she did not delude herself with any vain conceits, or deny her love, or give herself airs, in the idea of outshining the others. The full recognition of the futility of their infatuation, from a social point of view, its purposeless beginning, its self-bounded outlook, its lack of everything to justify its existence in the eye of civilization while lacking nothing in the eye of nature, the one fact that it did exist, ecstasizing them to a killing joy, all this imparted to them a resignation, a dignity, which a practical and sordid expectation of winning him as a husband would have destroyed. They tossed and turned on their little beds, and the cheese ring dripped monotonously downstairs. "Be you awake, Tess?" whispered one, half an hour later. It was Is Hewitt's voice. Tess replied in the affirmative, whereupon also Reddy and Marion suddenly flung the bedclothes off them, and sighed, "So be we. I wonder what she is like, the lady they say his family have looked out for him."
"I wonder," said Is.
"Some lady looked out for him?" gasped Tess, starting. "I have never heard o' that."
"Oh yes," Tess whispered. "A young lady of his own rank, chosen by his family, a doctor of divinity's daughter near his father's parish of Emminster. He don't much care for her, they say. But he is sure to marry her." They had heard so very little of this, yet it was enough to build up wretched dolorous dreams upon, there in the shade of the night. They pictured all the details of his being won round to consent, of the wedding preparations, of the bride's happiness, of her dress and veil, of her blissful home with him, when oblivion would have fallen upon themselves as far as he and their love were concerned. Thus they talked, and ached, and wept till sleep charmed their sorrow away. After this disclosure, Tess nourished no further foolish thought that there lurked any grave and deliberate import in Claire's attentions to her. It was a passing summer love of her face, for love's own temporary sake, nothing more. And thorny crown of this sad conception, was that she whom he really did prefer in a cursory way to the rest, she who knew herself to be more impassioned in nature, cleverer, more beautiful than they, was in the eyes of propriety far less worthy of him than the homelier ones whom he ignored. XXIV, amid the oozing fatness, and warm ferments of the Froom Vale, at a season when the rush of juices could almost be heard below the hiss of fertilization, it was impossible that the most fanciful love should not grow passionate. The ready bosoms existing there were impregnated by their surroundings. July passed over their heads, and the Thermidorian weather which came in its wake seemed an effort on the part of nature to match the state of hearts at Talbothay's dairy. The air of the place, so fresh in the spring and early summer, was stagnant and enervating now. Its heavy scents weighed upon them, and at midday the landscape seemed lying in a swoon. Ethiopic scorchings browned the upper slopes of the pastures, but there was still bright green herbage here where the watercourses purled. And as Claire was oppressed by the outward heats, so was he burdened inwardly by waxing fervor of passion for the soft and silent Tess. The rains having passed the uplands were dry. The wheels of the dairyman's spring cart, as he sped home from market, licked up the pulverized surface of the highway, and were followed by white ribbons of dust, as if they had set a thin power train on fire. The cows jumped wildly over the five-barred Barton gate, maddened by the gadfly. Dairyman Crick kept his shirt sleeves permanently rolled up from Monday to Saturday. Open windows had no effect in ventilation without open doors, and in the dairy garden the blackbirds and thrushes crept about under the currant bushes, rather in the manner of quadrupeds than of winged creatures. The flies in the kitchen were lazy, teasing, and familiar, crawling about in the unwonted places, on the floors, in two drawers, and over the backs of the milkmaid's hands. Conversations were concerning sunstroke, while butter making, and still more butter keeping, was a despair. They milked entirely in the meats for coolness and convenience, without driving in the cows. During the day the animals obsequiously followed the shadow of the smallest tree as it moved round the stem with the diurnal roll, and when the milkers came they could hardly stand still for the flies. On one of these afternoons four or five unmilked cows chanced to stand apart from the general herd, behind the corner of a hedge, among them being Dumpling and Old Pretty, who loved Tess's hands above those of any other maid. When she rose from her stool under a finished cow, Angel Claire, who had been observing her for some time, asked her if she would take the aforesaid creatures next. She silently assented, and with her stool at arm's length, and the pail against her knee, went round to where they stood. Soon the sound of Old Pretty's milk fizzing into the pail came through the hedge, and then Angel felt inclined to go round the corner also, to finish off a hard-yielding milcher who had strayed there, he being now as capable of this as the dairyman himself. All the men, and some of the women, when milking, dug their foreheads into the cows, and gazed into the pail. But a few, mainly the younger ones, rested their heads sideways. This was Tess Durbeyfield's habit, her temple pressing the milcher's flank, her eyes fixed on the far end of the meadow with the quiet of one lost in meditation. She was milking Old Pretty thus, and the sun chancing to be on the milking side, it shone flat upon her pink gowned form and her white curtain bonnet, and upon her profile, rendering it keen as a cameo cut from the dun background of the cow. She did not know that Claire had followed around, and that he sat under his cow watching her. The stillness of her head and features was remarkable. She might have been in a trance, her eyes open, yet unseeing. Nothing in the picture moved, but Old Pretty's tail and Tess's pink hands, the latter so gently, as to be a rhythmic pulsation only, as if they were obeying a reflex stimulus, like a beating heart. How very lovable her face was to him. Yet there was nothing ethereal about it. All was real vitality, real warmth, real incarnation. And it was in her mouth that this culminated. Eyes almost as deep and speaking he had seen before, and cheeks perhaps as fair, brows as arched, a chin and throat almost as shapely, her mouth he had seen nothing to equal on the face of the earth. to a young man with the least fire in him. That little upward lift in the middle of her red top lip was distracting, infatuating, maddening. He had never before seen a woman's lips and teeth which forced upon his mind with such persistent iteration the old Elizabethan simile of roses filled with snow. Perfect, he, as a lover, might have called them offhand. But no, they were not perfect. And it was the touch of the imperfect upon the would-be perfect that gave the sweetness, because it was that which gave the humanity. Claire had studied the curves of those lips so many times that he could reproduce them mentally with ease. And now, as they again confronted him, clothed with color and life, they sent an aura over his flesh, a breeze through his nerves, which well-nigh produced a qualm, and actually produced, by some mysterious physiological process, a prosaic sneeze. She then became conscious that he was observing her, but she would not show it by any change of position, though the curious dreamlike fixity disappeared, and a close eye might easily have discerned that the rosiness of her face deepened, and then faded till only a tinge of it was left. The influence that had passed into Claire like an excitation from the sky did not die down. Resolutions, reticences, prudences, fears, fell back like a defeated battalion. He jumped up from his seat, and, leaving his pail to be kicked over, if the milcher had such a mind, went quickly towards the desire of his eyes, and, kneeling down beside her, clasped her in his arms. Tess was taken completely by surprise, and she yielded to his embrace with unreflecting inevitableness. Having seen that it was really her lover who had advanced, and no one else, her lips parted, and she sank upon him in her momentary joy, with something very like an ecstatic cry. He had been on the point of kissing that too tempting mouth, but he checked himself, for tender conscience' sake. "Forgive me, Tess dear," he whispered. "Ought to have asked. I did not know what I was doing. I do not mean it as a liberty. I am devoted to you, Tessie, dearest, in all sincerity." Old Pretty by this time had looked round, puzzled, and seeing two people crouching under her where, by immemorial custom, there should have been only one, lifted her hind left crossly. "She is angry, she doesn't know what we mean, she'll kick over the milk," exclaimed Tess, gently striving to free herself, her eyes concerned with the quadruped's actions, her heart more deeply concerned with herself and Claire. She slipped up from her seat, and they stood together, his arm still encircling her. Tess's eyes, fixed on distance, began to fill. "Why do you cry, my darling?" he said. "Oh, I don't know," she murmured. As she saw, and felt more clearly the position she was in, she became agitated and tried to withdraw. "Well, I have betrayed my feeling, Tess, at last," said he, with a curious sigh of desperation, signifying unconsciously that his heart had outrun his judgment. "That I love you dearly and truly I need not say. But it shall go no further now, it distresses you, I am as surprised as you are. You will not think I have presumed upon your defenselessness, been too quick and unreflecting, will you? And I can't tell." He had allowed her to free herself, and in a minute or two the milking of each was resumed. Nobody had beheld the gravitation of the two into one, and when the dairyman came round by that screen nook a few minutes, Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.